OFAC reminded us again in Cordoba Music with a $41,000 penalty that even if you don't believe or know or expect that your behavior violates the sanctions program, tough luck. You're still on the hook. Cordoba was acquired by another U.S. company 2 months after the acquisition. They learned about the fact that Cordoba was selling products to Iran, and they claimed they didn't know about it, or they didn't think it was bad, they didn't think it was wrong. Again, this demonstrates the importance of companies really conducting training, integration, and putting in place a third-party screening.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Welcome, everybody. Michael Volkoff here, Corruption, Crime, and Compliance. And today we're going to take a look at the year in review for DOJ and the OFAC Sanctions Enforcement and Compliance Review. Thanks for joining me. Way past Happy New Year, legitimate Happy New Year wishes. Thanks, everyone. Let's talk a little bit. Sanctions enforcement is a big hot topic. And I think under the new administration, we're going to see a very aggressive approach to sanctions as well as tariff, trade enforcement in general. The Justice Department touted plans to go after corporations criminally has not yet appeared, but the resources are in place. But there were a lot of individuals prosecuted, a record year for DOJ of 70 individuals. OFAC had a slow year, but OFAC seems to have been focused more on, you know, administering these complex Russia sanctions and other topics. So the key compliance areas, though, identified through the OFAC enforcement measures, mergers and acquisitions and integration of your acquisition into your sanctions compliance program. And OFAC continues to stretch its jurisdiction. Secondary sanctions enforcement was aggressive, and I think we're going to continue to see that. And using some of the other words of their statute and regulations in terms of causing a foreign party to violate U.S. sanctions, to cause another party to violate sanctions, usually being the processing of bank transactions involving U.S. dollars. If there are U.S. dollars involved, no matter where, you've got a problem, you're up under jurisdiction of OFAC. And just a crying need for companies to enhance your trade compliance programs. Those are the messages that came out of everything that happened this year, which was, like I said, a pretty slow year for OFAC. OFAC in 2024 only brought 12 cases. Meanwhile, they brought 18 in 2023, 16, all the way up to 20 in 2021. 2019 was a record year of 26 cases that they brought. The other thing was the low amount of penalties. 2024, they had no blockbuster case like Binance or other big hundreds of millions of dollars of cases. They only recovered close to $47 million in penalties and fees. So now I did mention DOJ, the big, and I mentioned the fact that they indicted or charged, took guilty pleas from 70 individuals in 2024. 2023, they only had 38. 2022, 40. 2021, they had 28. So you can see the trend. I think we'll get over 100 this year. This will be a big year for DOJ and trade enforcement. No question about that. The cases themselves of the 70, 25 involved Iran and 23 Russia and 10 Venezuela and about 4 China. I think you're going to see China next year as the focus because the administration is promising to tighten regulations. So at the same time that you may see Russia sanctions relaxed, we're going to see China become the real focus. And I think that China is going to be the focus primarily because of tightening regulations with regard to military uses of certain products and product ranges. So let's go through some of the highlighted cases of last year. EFG International was the first case that came out from OFAC, a $3.7 million case. And EFG here, this was a reminder for the securities industry. They processed securities-related transactions for Cuban customers, an individual that was blocked under the Kingpin Act, and five payments for a person designated by the Russia sanctions. Interestingly, OFAC suspended 1 million of the penalties pending satisfactory completion of certain compliance commitments. And I had not seen that before in terms of a suspension of a payment based upon enhancements to your compliance program. So interesting. They also set up an internal control to require compliance approval for any high-risk counterparty. That makes sense. And frankly, we all should be doing that. And they also identified high-risk countries and applied enhanced due diligence to clients with exposure to those high-risk countries. Again, nothing surprising. Any risk-based program should have that as well. The biggest case of the year in terms of penalty was SCG Plastics, $20 million. And this reflected, again, what I talked about, a foreign company that causes a U.S. financial institution to process prohibited transactions. Here, SCG Plastics engaged in $291 million in wire transfers of a resin manufactured by a joint venture in Iran. And the parent company was a joint venture partner with the National Petrochemical Company of Iran. And SCG received wire payments and then made U.S. dollar transactions on behalf of the Iran joint venture. And they obfuscated the products. Origin, what a surprise, and the parties involved. And they caused then U.S. financial institutions to process these wire transfers based upon false information. So they agreed to a $20 million settlement. They shut down their business. This was a trading company, and they shut down. But the parent company agreed to maintain the sanctions compliance commitments for 5 years. An interesting case, but remember that causing somebody to violate the sanctions can give OFAC jurisdiction. We also had an interesting Mondo TV $538,000 penalty with North Korea sanctions at issue. An Italian animation company outsourced a project to a North Korean animation company. And the U.S. jurisdiction over this entire transaction, why? U.S. dollars involved. Mondo completed 18 wire transfers that were processed by U.S. banks, and they were paying third parties with the understanding that obviously it was going to go to North Korea. Interestingly, we always hear about individuals who are going to get prosecuted. Well, Mondo's CEO approved and signed the agreement, which specifically referred to North Korea. And not only that, Mondo TV's chief operating officer knew about it, and you'll love this, chief legal officer approved the payments. What law school did that person go to? That's all I got to say. Another interesting case back to, and this is back to the future here, with Safe Street Bank, $7.4 million. But remember the Russia sanctions, 2014, in response to the Crimea invasion. State Street paid $7.45 million for violations committed by Charles River, a subsidiary. And here's your acquisition integration issue. Safe Street acquired Charles in 2018. Obviously, due diligence did not pick up this fact, and even integration efforts didn't as well. And Safe Street inherited Charles River violations of Russian sanctions that occurred between 2016 and 2020. And there were 30 transactions in new debt. Remember, Directive 1 says no new debt with certain parties and puts time limits on this new debt. It has to be, it started at 90 days, then during the regulatory period went to 30, then went down to 14, involving two sectoral sanctioned entities, VTB Bank and Spur Bank. And they circumvented the sanctions by, they knew what they were doing. They contacted the two banks and asked them to redate the invoices to meet the timing restrictions. So again, there was no effort made to integrate, review, bring them into the compliance program, and then ultimately to make sure that they identify these. Vietnam Beverage, foreign company, North Korean sanctions violations, again, paying $860,000 And between January 16, September 18, a Vietnam bank entered 26 contracts to export beer and spirits to two North Korean companies. Now, senior managers reviewed and approved the contracts, and again, 1.1 million spent in US dollars with 43 wires. It was detected because following a restructuring in 2019, the new leadership discovered the North Korean transactions, and they built then a real compliance program after that. Interesting. American Life Insurance paid $178,000 for Iran sanctions violations. Here you had a sales agent who was basically out there selling directly to government entities of Iran, to schools that were run by Iran government, and another, and this is based in the UAE, which is always a high-risk area, as well as a library, or I guess it was called a library or something like that. But in any event, all three entities here were connected to, or it was to the embassy, that's what it was. All three entities obviously linked to the government of Iran. Sales agent tried to get an application through, and then it was rejected by the compliance department. And boom, what does he do? He does it through a third party. And the agent then also gave the third party false ownership documentation and got it through. Same sales agent sold to two other UAE-based entities, the schools, and payments were rejected. So the sales agent arranged to take cash payments. So they voluntarily self-disclosed, remedial measures, goodbye to the sales agent, and paying the government $178,000. We also had, interestingly, two individuals prosecuted and by OFAC. And this was interesting because this first case, I'm scratching my head and wondering, why isn't this person prosecuted criminally? An individual agreed to pay a $1.1 million penalty for 75 violations of the Iran sanctions program from 2019 to 2022, involved in the purchase, renovation, and operation of a hotel on the Caspian Sea in Iran. And he had a complex scheme. The first was pretty straightforward. He sold real estate in Iran and reinvested the proceeds into the hotel. More importantly was this system, which is the first time I've seen this. The second system that he used was he used an individual, he transferred funds using an informal value transfer system, IVTS, facilitated by a Canadian money services business. Interestingly, I didn't see anything targeting the Canadian money service business as a result of this. But the way the informal value transfer system worked is they reach out to somebody in Iran, have the Iran person just transfer money to the hotel project, and then they go through the Canadian money service business to send the money to the individual who there's no connection between the individual in terms of the formal relationship with accounts or anything like that, just informally done. And the individual concealed parts of the transactions by reducing transaction amounts like smurfing, nothing written on the memo lines, disguising purpose, and all of that. Interesting case. My favorite case, though, for the year was AOTEC, Iran sanctions of $14.5 million penalty for one violation. Just one. And listen to what this one was. AOTEC, a German company, attempted to dismantle and then sell an entire Australian polypropylene plant to Iran. They hired a U.S. company to broker the resale of the decommissioned plant in Australia. The U.S. company entered into an agreement with AOTEC to sell the plant for $9 million and included sanctions compliance provisions. And they were told by AOTEC, oh, we're just selling this to Turkey. Meanwhile, at the same time, AOTEC had a separate deal, all formalized, with an Iran-organized subsidiary and Petro-Iranian Downstream Industries Development Company, PIDID, P-I-D-I-D, a sanctioned entity to divert the plant to Iran. So 2 days after signing the first agreement, they signed this agreement, and unbeknownst to the U.S. company, they resell the plant and transport it to Iran. They take it apart for years, 2 years, and export it in parts from Australia to Iran. Think about all the paperwork. Think about all the shipping documentation. Think about all the efforts to disguise this from the U.S. company. The U.S. company gets an anonymous submission of the second contract puts a halt to the project. And then what? What do you think they did? They got all the documentation. They said, okay, everything looks fine. Go ahead and let it go through. Unbelievable case. One violation, $14.5 million. My favorite case of the year. Little bit of irony for C.H. Robinson. C.H. Robinson paid $257,000 for Iran and Cuba violations. The irony is that C.H. Robinson is a logistics company that sometimes provides consulting services to companies. And I came across them in one or two of my clients with providing sanctions compliance. Well, they forgot themselves here and failed to integrate acquired companies into their operating system and sanctions data processes. And what happened as a result? Five acquisitions, companies ended up engaging in prohibited conduct. And they export, and I give them credit, C.H. Robinson's export compliance team discovered the violations during regular sample audits. But a little bit of irony that goes along with it. We also saw the first individual who was prosecuted under the Magnitsky sanctions program, and they paid $45,000. Here they were a member of the same company of which the CEO had been designated. And this person who was the right-hand person to the CEO didn't really care and just continued on with transactions that this person was prohibited, the CEO was prohibited from engaging in. And what happened is OFAC used this as a case to highlight the importance of gatekeepers and professionals who have responsibility to exercise reasonable care. They have a crucial function here. And this person was providing professional services, and this person was the secretary and treasurer of the company and ended up having to pay a fine. I think it was an important message to send. OFAC reminded us again in Cordoba Music with a $41,000 penalty that even if you don't believe or know or expect that your behavior violates the sanctions program, tough luck. You're still on the hook. Cordoba was acquired by another U.S. company 2 months after the acquisition. They learned about the fact that Cordoba was selling products to Iran, and they claimed they didn't know about it, or they didn't think it was bad, they didn't think it was wrong. Again, this demonstrates the importance of companies really conducting training, integration, and putting in place a third-party screening. We had Sky Geek, $22,000 less, came out December 31st, believe it or not. And in the case, Sky Geek had to refund to two companies in the UAE. They screened the two companies before when they did the original contract, and they were okay. In the meanwhile, the two companies then got designated in the UAE for connections to Russia. And boom, when they refunded the money, they failed to rescreen them. And as a result, they gave the money to two prohibited entities. Tough luck. Things change. You got to stay up and abreast of the sanctions because they change all the time. Commerce Department, just a quick review, 15 criminal cases that they brought, and those were part of the 70 that I went through. They also imposed a $5.8 million administrative penalty. This was the largest penalty of the year on TE Connectivity after its voluntary self-disclosure of the illegal export of low-level items to parties tied to Chinese military electronics programs. There was also a $3.3 million penalty on a California company for exporting controlled items to Russia. One other reminder, they imposed a total of nearly $400,000 in penalties on four companies to resolve anti-boycott violations. So we're seeing more anti-boycott prosecutions occurring. Okay, let's just talk a little bit about next year. What are we expecting in terms of the new administration? Well, tariffs. Tariffs universally may go up 10 to 20% on all imports targeting the EU and 60% on China imports. These tariffs are also going to occur with regard to Mexico and Canada. And we're going to see real circumvention and compliance risks with these new tariff regulations. And we're also going to see aggressive China tariffs and export controls and enforcement, like I've mentioned before. What's going to happen to the Russia sanctions? Well, the new president promised to end the war, and I think lifting of sanctions will take some time. They'll leverage the lifting for concessions, and it could take 12 months to even 2 years, probably 18 months at max, but it could just conceivably go that long. But the Biden administration is making it a little bit harder in imposing just this latest round of energy sanctions targeting Russia, which were pretty heavy in their implication. We'll see a renewed focus on Iran sanctions, but there was a lot of prosecution of Iran cases. But we're going to see, I think, even more because they're going to tighten those up. And we're going to see secondary sanctions stretched to the limit, just like they're doing with regard to the Russia sanctions. China is where we're going to see the big squeeze. Advanced computing, semiconductors, artificial intelligence, quantum computing, advanced energy technologies, dual use technologies with military applications. Watch the regs. They're going to get tight. Heightened scrutiny under CFIUS, an outbound investment framework, may finally get adopted and implemented. Watch out for the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. The new Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, was a sponsor of that legislation, and we're going to see even more aggressive enforcement. We saw this year was a big year of enforcement of the forced labor prevention. Okay, everyone, that's just a quick run through. I know that was pretty quick, but I wanted to make sure we did this in a short amount of time on sanctions. And next week, I'm going to do the FCPA and anti-corruption review as well. All right, folks, have a great week and talk to you next week.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkov, go to volkovlaw.com.